This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll be hearing from Representative Steve Russell as he shares about the ongoing social engineering within the military. Also, Mariah Bridges, who was chosen to speak at her high school graduation, joins us to talk about how her First Amendment rights were violated by the school's superintendent. But first, we're going to hear from Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, who joined Tony on Wednesday of this week to talk about the shooting in Alexandria, Virginia that critically injured House Majority Whip Steve Scalise and injured congressional aide Zach Barth, Tyson Foods lobbyist Matt Mika, and two Capitol Police officers, Crystal Griner and David Bailey. We here at Family Research Council ask that you hold these men and women and their families up in prayer. Here now is that interview with Senator James Lankford.
Senator, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Senator, so glad to be with you. How about that?
Oh, yeah, there you are. Gotcha.
Apologize for the little delay. That mute button does make a difference.
It does. Sometimes I wish I could push it in other places. But
I get that.
You went down to the Senate floor to address today's shooting, which was, this was a pretty extreme act. I mean, over 50 rounds were shot. It lasted about 10 minutes. What does this say about what's happening in our country?
Yeah, it's exceptionally painful, obviously, for the Scalise family, for the family of the Capitol Hill Police, for the other staff members there. It's painful for the entire Hill community and for the nation to have anyone attacked. The challenge of it is now trying to determine motive, and everything's pointing towards a very politically based attack. Unlike years ago when Gabby Giffords was shot, it was this mentally unstable individual they couldn't figure out any kind of motive or motivation for. This seems to be an individual that's singularly focused on trying to shoot Republicans and seems to be very motivated in that direction. The pain of that is, quite frankly, that our rhetoric has risen to a level that people now feel like they're going to take the next level of action, that just speaking out is not enough, that they're now going to actually take action. That's a very bad place for us as a nation, and it's a bad sign. And quite frankly, there were a lot of conversations around the Hill today. Towards the late morning, we had some prayer times and other times together with staff and with members that the conversation started rolling towards each person telling their stories of the latest death threat that they've had. And we all faced that as people in the public eye, but they've dramatically increased in the last several months. And you take them seriously, but now you understand, no, there are some people that really mean it when they say that and put some of those threats out. They plan to be able to carry that out. So it's incredibly sobering for our family and for each of us, but we also have a responsibility that we have to be able to fulfill.
Yeah, it was early this morning, moments after it occurred, I got a text from someone telling me that Steve had been shot. And, of course, it was just almost five years ago, that we had the shooting here at the Family Research Council.
Right.
And it come to find out this man's Facebook page had a lot of the same links and likes as the gunman that came into the Family Research Council, like the Southern Poverty Law Center and some of these other leftist groups. But we have seen in recent days, I mean, you have Hollywood putting together this play in which the president is assassinated and it's celebrated and declared to be an outstanding play. You have the comedy routine with a beheading the president. I mean, look, this stuff has gone farther than it's ever gone before.
Right. It's incredibly dark and it's difficult. Steve Scalise is a friend to both you and I. Know him well. This is a person that's been very outspoken in his personal faith and his own journey. He is the House sponsor of the Johnson Amendment bill that he has in the House. I have in the Senate. We've worked together a lot on issues of religious liberty. So he is someone that has been out there and has been active, but this seems to be an act just on Republicans, just in general,
right.
Just to be able to go attack whoever is out there rather than just Steve in particular. He happened to be one of many that were there. But the rhetoric and the imagery, the belittling of the president, the constant droning on and on and on, is raising to a level that obviously is driving some people to be able to respond in a way that is exceptionally inappropriate. Even Bernie Sanders to come out and say this person was a volunteer on my presidential campaign, but this is despicable and sickening. I agree with Bernie on that, but we're now at a whole new level.
Well, you bring up Senator Lankford, Bernie Sanders, and it was just last week that Bernie Sanders went on really what I would say a rampage against Russell Vought, that has been nominated by the president to serve as the number two man at the Office of Management and Budget.
Right.
And it wasn't an issue about his professional capabilities that he raised, but rather he delved into and excoriated him over his theological holdings, which happened to be Orthodox Christian.
Right. So basically what Bernie Sanders did is he said this person is interviewing and being nominated for a position dealing with accounting and with economics, but because he is a Christian, he's not eligible to be able to serve in this role. He's not qualified to be able to do it. And basically what Bernie was saying is, what kind of Christian really are you? It seemed to be this sense of, you can be a Christian as long as you don't follow the teachings of Jesus. Because all that Russell did was quote John 3:18.
Right.
And in that quoting, he's saying that's intolerant. So it's this very odd sense of violating, quite frankly, Article 6 of the Constitution, which says there's no religious test or qualification for any officer or elected official in the United States. That's very clear from the founding of our government that there's no religious test. And Senator Sanders is trying to now create a religious test to say, if you have a certain type of faith, then that disqualifies you. People that are Muslim believe that me as a Christian, I'm an infidel. That doesn't offend me in being able to interact and be able to work with them in other areas. I understand we have a very different perspective on faith. But to be able to say to an individual, just because you follow the teachings of Jesus, you're not qualified to be able to serve in government, I find it an entirely different level of any conversation we've had in the past, and it rightfully needs to be confronted.
Now we've come to a point where if you have a Christian viewpoint and you hold to Christian theology, then Bernie Sanders is suggesting that you are disqualified from serving in government.
Correct. And that has been a growing issue that you've watched before, whether it be in the military, whether it be in government office, wherever it may be. You can say you can have a Christian faith, just never express it, and don't live out basic Christian doctrine. Or to be able to say, as is often being said now in the open society and the culture, we have freedom of worship rather than the free exercise of religion. We don't have freedom of worship. That's something that China would say. If you're in a certain building at a certain time, you can worship as you want. We don't have that. We have the free exercise of religion, saying you can not only have a faith, but you can live out the principles of your faith in your workplace, in your leisure time with your family, wherever that may be. You can live out the principles of your faith. That's what's protected in America.
You said earlier, James, and I want to make sure that's very clear, that there's no evidence to suggest that that Steve in particular was targeted. He just happened to be on the field at second base when the shooting started and was hit in the hip. But the point is this growing hostility that we're seeing, you know, whether it's comedians holding the head of the president or plays on Broadway assassinating the president. I mean, there is a coarsening of society that leads people who are, you know, quite frankly, you know, teetering on the edge to do things like what we saw today.
Right. And we don't know all of the motivation yet of the shooter. We have some very clear signals of that direction based on things that are on his own social media, based on statements that he's made in the past, based on his own political operation. But there could be a lot more motivation there. It's not an open and shut case.
Right.
But it certainly lends that direction. And I would tell you, it's one of the reasons we started about a year and a half ago something we called Solution Sundays. It was a very simple idea initially dealing with race that we have opened up. And the Solution Sundays conversation is very, very simple. I started having conversations with people to say, has your family ever invited a family of a different race over to your home for dinner? To establish just a friendship in a conversation. To get around the table, as I've said, we'll never get all the issues on the table until we get our feet under the same table. And to be able to have those dialogues. I've been astounded at the number of contacts that we've had from people saying, I've never done that, but also never thought about the fact that I had never done that. Once we actually invited a family of another race that came over for dinner, we initiated this great conversation of friendship. I'm so grateful that I was pushed that direction. Then I started having people about 6 months later saying, could we do that with people in different political parties and other issues that are out there? I said, absolutely you can. The issue is, let's start working past we're opposed to each other and start establishing relationships and saying we may have some common ground in other areas and think differently in other areas, and that's okay, but let's at least find our common ground areas and establish that. And you find this is a biblical principle, whether that be Paul going into Mars Hill and establishing some of those basic connections, or you find that with Jesus going into all kinds of different places and being assaulted by the Pharisees, saying, I can't believe you went there and sat down and ate with those people. That's a basic principle that we sometimes do not live out our own values. Sitting down and having a meal is a great first step.
It is, and having conversations. I mean, it humanizes people. We need to talk to people and not about people. It has a huge impact. Well, Senator, thanks so much for taking time out this afternoon to join us. As always, great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well.
We encourage you to continue to lift up in prayer those who have been affected by the shooting in Alexandria, Virginia. You can find many other issues that could use your prayer when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at ongoing social engineering in the military.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. This is a must-attend event to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Franklin Graham, and many more. Register now at the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Thursday's edition of Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by Representative Steve Russell of Oklahoma as they discussed some Obama-era social engineering that is still going on in the military. Here's how Tony got things started.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's always good to be with you.
You've expressed concern over the Department of Defense moving forward with this policy, having not really evaluated the impact it would have on readiness.
Well, it assumes several things. One, there's no clear criteria even for the definitions of the things that they're trying to purport. Also of great concern is that it assumes that the rights of conscience of the overwhelming majority of military commanders, military physicians, and lawyers are no longer protected. And it forces a detrimental, confusing, and military readiness weakening construct on the very people required to defend our republic.
Well, both the Army and the Marine Corps are trying to push the deadline back by as much as 2 years, although Navy has already accepted the July 1 date. What's the sense of, I know you've kind of pulled together and leading a Warriors Caucus in Congress. What's the sense of Congress? Are they going to encourage this administration to listen to the military leaders as they said they would, or are they going to push forward with this policy?
Well, we have not had folks want to come forth to fight the issue. It has been one of those things where it was very hastily done in the last administration. It was forced under Secretary Carter during his tenure. These training vignettes that they have and the proposed training policy are very, very problematic on moral conscience. This is a concern to all Americans, Tony, because our taxes are being asked to be used to not only further this, but also do surgeries, medical treatments, transitioning protocols. Let me give you an example of vignette number six. Here's the vignette. A soldier has completed Army gender transition from female to male as indicated in the department enrollment system. The soldier has not, did not have a sex reassignment surgery and recently stopped taking male hormones in order to try and start a family. Today, the soldier approached his commanding officer to discuss his newly confirmed pregnancy. This is so fraught with confusion. And the other major concern is what on earth does this have to do with readiness of the defense of our republic and how did we get to this type of ground where we are requiring your tax dollars and mine to not only promote this, but to have it so confusing to commanders. And me, as a former battle commander, commander of 1,000 soldiers in a task force in Iraq, I've served in combat in Afghanistan and the Balkans. And this is something that will really cause a lot of confusion and problems for commanders, and it does nothing to promote our military in readiness, nothing at all.
Well, in fact, I would think it would hinder readiness when you look at
it. Absolutely would hinder, and several of these vignettes, as you go through this proposed policy, it says that commanders are given authority to make determinations on whether or not a soldier would be deployable based upon where they're at in this supposed chain of transitioning. Okay, so here's another vignette. I decide I don't want to deploy to combat. I state that I'm suffering from gender dysphoria, which there is no criteria available for commanders to even know what this means. And then I'm in a trick bag where I have to make some determination based upon some social ideological agenda that the vast majority of the military is not focused on. They're focused on readiness and combat readiness and the defense of our republic. And now you've got a construct where soldiers who don't want to deploy can throw this monkey wrench in the machinery, and you're underwriting it with your tax dollars.
In addition to that, Congressman Russell, we have a military that has been shrunk to almost pre-World War II manpower in terms of resources.
It's actually worse. Let me explain.
Okay.
180 million souls in 1940. If you do the proportion per capita, we have a 30% smaller military than we had then.
Okay, we take those numbers, we look at that, but then you add to that that means every one of those individuals is essential for the military to perform its mission. So when you have someone who's transitioning, they're non-deployable, that's a billet that is filled by them. You cannot fill it with somebody else, but you cannot use them. So you're not going to be able to operate at full strength.
Well, and that is correct, and it also creates a weakening of that particular trained soldier or warrior or whatever it might be, in that they have vital training, and now due to whatever it is that this process becomes, with hormone therapy or with the surgeries that your tax dollars are paying for in violation of your rights and conscience, that will lower their ability to perform their assigned missions, even were they able to deploy.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, my guest, former combat officer, retired from the United States Army. Congressman, when you asked the question, how did we get here? Well, I think I think that was a rhetorical question. We got here because of Barack Obama's social engineering that he put in the military, and unfortunately, we had military officers that allowed it to take place. That's my words. That's my observation of watching the last 8 years. But there's a way out, and I think it starts with this policy here, this administration, the Secretary of Defense. Secretary Mattis can put a stop to this based upon you have two branches of service that are primarily responsible for putting boots on the ground, the Army and
That's
the Marine
correct.
Corps, saying, hey, we need more time to evaluate this. You have members of
they
Congress saying the
do.
Same thing.
They absolutely do need more. I mean, I'm looking at this as a combat veteran, a former infantry commander from the United States Army. If I were presented with one of these vignettes or scenarios, it would be very, very confusing. And it's not because I was an infantryman and I can't figure it out. I have a high degree of education. I'm a member of Congress. I think I've got the mental capacity to try to work through very difficult situations, having led soldiers in in battle. This has created a problem that we do not need to be wasting our time or our tax dollars. What a soldier chooses to do on his or her time off of the base is their private business. But you do not make it something where we have a social engineering construct that is underwritten by your tax dollars, violates the rights of moral conscience of military physicians, military commanders, and many of their co-serving soldiers. Where are their rights, Tony?
Right. All right, Congressman Steve Russell, as always, great to have you on the program. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about Representative Steve Russell when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, another school district denies the freedom of speech for a student's graduation address.
Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. In a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. This past Wednesday, high school senior Mariah Bridges, along with Liberty Institute's Mike Berry, joined Tony to discuss Mariah's case against her school district for censoring her graduation speech. Here now is Tony Perkins.
Mariah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your time.
All right. And Mike, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having us on.
Well, I saw this, and I said, look, this is another one of those young people out there that has more courage than the adults that run the schools to stand up for their rights and their freedom. So I'm just going to start. Mariah, tell our listeners what took place and where things stand.
Well, I asked by the president to give the closing remarks at my high school graduation, and when I had submitted the remarks, I heard back from the superintendent, and she told me that I could not use them because of religious nature, because they were in the form of a prayer. I could not say any prayer, especially not one that excluded other religions by ending in the matchless name of Jesus Christ.
Well, Mike, we've seen other cases like this. This has become, I don't know if they're just misguided or if this is intentional, but we've seen other school officials do this. And this is an infringement upon the rights of these students, is it not?
That's exactly right. You know, Mariah has the First Amendment right to, if she so chooses to include references to her faith or to close her speech in a brief prayer or mentioning in the name of Jesus. And in fact, it's funny that you mentioned that our schools are becoming misguided, because the U.S. Department of Education has actually issued guidance on this, and it looks to me like the superintendent here is unaware or disregarding the Department of Education's guidance on graduation speakers and things of that nature.
So, Mariah, what happened? I mean, you were told you couldn't speak a prayer or mention the name of Jesus, so what was the outcome?
Well, I had to edit my speech, and when I went up to Stoic, I gave the speech that I submitted. I mentioned to the audience that I was forbidden to pray. I've got a speech prepared for them, and then at the end, I did end it in the matchless name of Jesus Christ, because I felt that was the right thing to do.
And what was the outcome? What was the response?
I haven't heard anything from the school administration, and they haven't responded that I'm aware of to any of the lawyers at First Liberty, but we contacted them to find out what exactly my rights were and found that it was illegal of the superintendent to forbid me to pray. And so now we're just trying to make other students aware of their rights and the law as it is.
So, Mike, what have you had communication with the school?
No, actually, that's what we're hopeful for is an opportunity to sit down and meet with the school district and clarify this and ensure that you know, this unfortunate incident doesn't happen to anybody else. That, you know, to have Mariah's graduate, you know, this is the culminating event of her high school career, something that she wants to remember for the rest of her life with a positive memory, and to have it end with kind of censorship, this unconstitutional censorship, and really feeling that the school is infringing on her rights, that's no way to end, you know, your school career, especially for somebody as accomplished as Mariah. So we're hopeful to have a sit-down with the school, resolve this, and ensure that it doesn't happen to anybody else.
So, Mariah, that's kind of, as you stated, your objective here in following this up even after the fact is to make sure other students coming behind you realize that they have freedoms, they have rights, and they should exercise them.
Exactly. My graduation's over. I can't get it back. It wasn't a great day. It was kind of stressful, but I don't want it to happen to anyone else.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking that stand and making sure that you look back behind you and protecting those rights of other students coming behind you. And, of course, Mike, the work that First Liberty does, outstanding, and great to have you back on the program, Mike. And we'll continue to draw attention to these cases and, of course, celebrate those young people that, like Mariah, that have the courage and the boldness to stand up for what they believe.
Well, thank you for having us.
All right, Mariah, best of luck to you.
You can find out more about this case when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.